Good to be with you this morning. I really enjoyed the lessons that I had to leave to get to Alabama for a series meeting down there, so I didn't get to hear the ones on Sunday yet, but I want to hear them online. I really enjoyed the lessons I got to hear from Art Adams last week. There was a lot of benefit in that. It's good to be back, and I want really not so much to preach this morning as to talk to you. There were a number of things over the past week, some little, some huge, in which just either reminders or new instances of things that are just really, really exemplary. And I want to share some of that with you. So I was trying to think of a title for it, and I went with Assorted Lessons from Outstanding Examples. And I'm going to give a ground rule as we begin. There's a lot of outstanding examples sitting in this room right now. I'm not going to talk about anybody sitting in this room right now. We'll be talking about some people that have at times been sitting in this room, but we're going to be looking at examples from people other than those of us having this discussion right now. And there's precedent in this. Luke, in his gospel and in the book of Acts, gives a number of accounts of just outstanding examples. There's Anna, who is just, you know, there at the temple regularly and praising God and prophesying. There's the centurion that he records in chapter 7, who Jesus said, "I haven't seen faith like that in all of Israel." There's the poor widow that Jesus singles out and compliments. There's Joseph, who is noted for, also known as Barnabas, for his generosity, and then, of course, a number of other things. There's Dorcas, otherwise known as Tabitha, who just talks about all the good that she had done, Priscilla and Aquila, etc. But we know those accounts. I'm going to be talking about some recent examples. So all of these have to do within the last 8 days or so. Some of them are past history, but they've things that have either been come to mind or happened recently. First one I want to talk about is Angela Meoza. A lot of you know Angelo, some of you don't. If you don't know Angelo, you've often seen Michael here. Angelo and Patricia live in Denver, Pennsylvania, and he's had cancer for a while, and it took him away from us last night. He's known for a good while that he is going to be leaving before long, and he took a sharp decline about a week ago, and they knew it was just a matter of days he wouldn't be coming out of the hospital, or weeks. And then by the last 2 days, it was pretty clear. When I landed, I went directly over there to the hospital and got to talk to him. I don't know that he heard me. The day or two before, he'd still been cognizant, but, you know, the decline at the end. But he'd gotten to see his grandchildren. He'd gotten to say bye to people and different things. And I want to share with you a couple things about Angela, if you don't know him. Powerful in many different ways. This is while he's sick. There he is with his family, his wife Patricia. You'll see Michael there, and that's his grandbaby. And if you don't know who his grandbaby is, that's Catherine and Micah Binghams. So Micah married their daughter Catherine. They live up worship with the church up in Elmira, New York. That's just one of their grandkids. This is Angelo when we were having a workshop here. You'll recognize him up there, and some of you all as well and such. This is Angelo talking to us last year at the Exton two-day study. About 60 preachers get together and spend 2 days digging into a book. And he talked to us last year, and he wanted to say some things because he knew he wasn't going to be around long. And so it's usually all a bunch of preachers and Angelo and his uncle, Joe. I'll give you, there's so many things that could be said about it, but I'll tell you this one. You know that I've worked for a number of years with young men in the summer, both in the opportunities that Sewell Hall set up and Gary Fisher and Joe Works. The one that Joe Works does is the one that costs the most because it's in the Northeast. So he has to rent a property that's expensive, and he feeds all the campers and all the staff, and he only charges like $125 for the kids to come, which doesn't cover all the food. It costs thousands of dollars more than it costs. Every year, Angelo would call, and he'd say, "What do you need?" You know, and some years, Joe had enough contributions from other people that he was set, so Angelo didn't need to do anything that year. Other years, you know, big contributions, but every year he'd call to say, you know, "What do you need to make it happen this year?" One time he called a preacher and he was saying, "What about you?" He said, "How's your computer?" He said, "Well, my computer's fine." He said, "Just a couple years old. How about your car? You know, do you need another car? How many miles are on your car?" He just, Angelo was, had done real well in business. He had a radiator business that he started, and it did real well, and he ended up supplying Toyota, I think, in some other places. And then he sold the business and was looking to retire, you know, and have a lot of time and be busy in the gospel and such. And shortly after he retired, found out he had cancer. But what did he want to do? He wanted to keep helping people and talking to people about what they were doing. And we've got people here that do things like that, too. And just outstanding things and anonymous things. And also, you don't have to be rich to do things that where you're just really helping other people a lot. Angelo had a lot of money, and he was very generous with that money and did great things. But you remember the widow and the widow's mite story? Jesus wasn't impressed because of how much she gave, but how much she was a giver. Think about Phoebe Hamilton. Phoebe is not a rich woman. They're doing fine, but she's not the wealthiest person around. But anytime anything needed to be done, if you went to help out with something, who was already there? Yeah, Phoebe was already there helping out. Let's read a passage here, 1 Timothy chapter 6. With each of these, there's a number of passages that could have been put up. I've just selected some. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verse 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world, neither can we carry anything out. But having food and covering, we shall be therewith content. Verse 17. Charge them that are rich in this present world that they be not high-minded, nor have their hopes set on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy, that they do good, and that they may be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on the life which is life indeed. And example number two. This one was just yesterday. It's the guy in seat 11C. I don't know his name. I wanted to meet him. I wanted to get his name. But my flight out of Alabama got delayed. And I had to connect. I was small airport to small airport, Harrisburg to Huntsville. You got to get a connection. And that's off in Detroit. And I get a message Friday night, my first flight is delayed. Well, that's not real good when you've got a connecting flight. And I got to the airport and they said, you know, you may have to do the O.J. Simpson. I assumed they were talking about the commercial, not the homicide. But we get there and I'm trying to, and it's a small plane, and so they want us all to check our carry-on to go under the plane. And I'd asked if I could, because I needed to get there, and I was trying to get there and see Angelo before he passed on. So I asked if I could take that on there, and they said, you can try. And as I was coming on, a guy heard that I was had a tough connection. This is a guy in first class. He's got, it was a small plane, so it's like seats 2 and 1. So it's here, you're not even by anybody. He was in 2A. He's got a first class ticket. He realized I had a short connection. He said, take my seat. And he said, I don't mind, take my seat. And he said, what's yours? Mine's 11C. And he gets up and he leaves. And after having a first class ticket, he goes back to coach. And there I am in seat 2A, you know, easy to get off the plane quickly and run, which I did to make my next connection. I don't know who he was, but what a noble person. He didn't know me from Adam. He gave up his seat. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, too bad, hope you make it. You know, be warmed and filled. He gave up his seat for a total stranger. I went back when it was free, but he was asleep, so I didn't disturb him. And later toward the end, I asked the waitress, I gave her some money. I said, can you go, you know, tell the guy, you know, have a meal on me and thank you and stuff. So he came back. He said he refused it. He said he was glad to do it. And, you know, I'd wanted to exchange cards with him, find out who he was, drop him a note later, but he's asleep and I didn't get disturbed. I'll never know his name, but, wow, what a great example. What a great example. Matthew 7:12. Whatsoever you would that, you know, people do to you, do that to them. You know, sometimes we're the person in a pinch, and I really appreciate what he did for me. The question is, what am I going to do? What are you going to do the next time we see somebody else in a pinch? It's one thing to help out your family. It's one thing to help out your brethren. It's one thing to help out the people really close to you. What about strangers? Remember what it said in Hebrews 13:1? Remember, don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. Great example. Next, the church in Hartselle, Alabama. That's not the church. That's the old church building. I couldn't find a picture of the people. I thought about putting up a picture of the preacher's cute kids, but I couldn't find a picture of the group. I couldn't find a picture of the current building. So I put the old building. This is the building that would have been there when I lived nearby there. When I was single, I lived about 5 miles west of this when I was preaching in Decatur, Alabama. I lived out in the country. And good friend of mine preached here, David Hartz, who was also a great example in so many ways. This is, I don't know how old that picture is, but the church here has grown a lot. Some years ago, Bill Hall, some of you will know Bill Hall. Bill Hall, among other things, wrote a really powerful book called Two Men. And it uses the principles when Jesus said in the Gospel of Luke, two men went up to the temple to pray. And then shows an example of one person doing it wrong. It shows an example of one person doing it right. And he just uses that format to go through and discuss a bunch of different situations. Two people face a situation. One faces it right. But he's been very effective and done great work. He's in his 80s. But some years ago, they had him come in, and the church has grown. It's doing real well. What used to be the auditorium is now a classroom. They built a new auditorium over here to the right. And it is a really thriving church. Brother Hall, in his 80s, for the last some years, his wife has been very ill. She passed on last year. He's back into doing meeting work now. He just came in off of a couple meetings. But for the local preaching, now for the last few years, there's been a couple different men. Lance Blackburn is down there. Wonderful family, real cute little kids, and just a real good combination of workers down there, along with some really good men serving as elders, and a congregation that's pulling together. They are, I want us to learn a lesson from this. following the Lord takes energy, time, effort, commitment. Everybody needs some rest. Everybody needs some downtime. Everybody has other things that's going on in life. But of course, the gospel needs to pervade our life overall. There are great things that can be done when everybody is working and pulling in the same direction at the same time. I want to illustrate that with a couple of physical things. If one of us goes outside and tries to overturn a car, which is sometimes necessary. If you ever heard about those situations, there's an accident, somebody's trapped under a car, and a bunch of men go over there and they do what? They lift up the car and they save the guy from underneath. They pull him out. Other times you'll see riots and they're flipping cars over. How do you flip a car over? If I go out here and try to flip a car over, it's not going over. I might rock it some, but it's not going over. If two of us try to flip a car over, it's not going over. What happens if a bunch of us all get out there? That car's going over. Tug of war. Last summer, some adults of us were doing some tug of war with some kids. It was a bunch of kids. And we were told to let the kids win. We didn't have to let them win. There were so many of them. I mean, I don't remember how many were, but it was a bunch of little kids. And we got there, and it's like, you get a whole bunch of kids pulling, and they pulled us forward. There wasn't anything I could do about it. There was, because they were all pulling together. It wasn't somebody, occasionally I'll give a tug. I know they're pulling, and they're pulling, so I don't need to pull. That's not how it works in tug of war. What happened? All of those kids, when they're all pulling, that is a powerful, powerful thing. It is very easy in a congregation sometimes to get what's famously called, and this is known in business, is an 80-20 principle. How many of you know from business the 80-20 principle? All right. And what is the 80-20 principle? And it has to do with usually a whole lot of work is getting done by a few of the most motivated. Is that the way it should be in the body of Christ? And in that tug of war thing, could those kids pull all these men across if most of the kids thought, well, we'll let those few kids do most of the pulling? They're pulling together. So Hartzell is doing a good job of that. Got there Sunday morning, and class time, it's full. I mean, they had 215 that morning, and the building was full. It wasn't half full, and then at time for the assembly, it filled up. It was full. That night, not everybody came back, and sometimes there's a reason why somebody can't. You've got health or other things going on, but we had, I think, 178 that night. And every night, I'd say it was between high 100s to around 200, just all the way through. And it made for a really energetic, thriving group. It was exciting also because they had a bunch of babies. When I was asked to do... they'd asked me about topics. So I sent a few topics. And when they picked child training, at first I was kind of disappointed because I do that one a lot. I enjoy doing it, but sometimes I like to do something different. And they said, yeah, that one. But then I got there and found out about all the babies and everything. So then suddenly it's a real exciting topic to do. And it was just going really well and really, really involved. And it doesn't mean they don't have problems. And they told me some of the problems, that they've had to deal with and stuff and are dealing with. Every congregation is going to have problems. But let me tell you something. When we're all pulling together, it makes a world of difference. Are we an army? It tells us in Ephesians 6 that we are to put on what? The breastplate, the sword of the Spirit. We are to be an army of God. When an army is charging, what does it need to do? Yes. And if you read history and stuff, if you're a history buff, you might be familiar with battles where this type of thing happens. When you get a really, really motivated group of people on one side of the battlefield and an unmotivated larger number on the other side of the battlefield, who's going to win that battle? Yeah, because if everybody on this side is all in, these 100 soldiers on this side, if they are all in, and those 400 soldiers over there are not all in, and these 100 charge, what happens? What do the 400 do? Some of them are running, some of it, but these are all in. And that's why the generals and stuff, you know, they lead their men, they get them, and they go. We will be at different points in our lives, different times. Let's look at a verse here in Thessalonians that illustrates this. At battle, is everybody always ready to be on the front line? What if you got wounded last week? And, you know, we got you on the stretcher and we're back here and bandaged you up. Are we sending you in on the front line? No, right now, you don't need to be the one, you know, doing the conquering. Right now, you need to be the one getting the help. And the idea here, I want you to think about takers and givers, okay? Angelo, taker or giver? Giver. The guy that ended up in 11C instead of 2A, taker or giver? Giver. All of us sometimes will need to be takers, okay? This last week, what's Angelo been doing? He's been receiving, you know, they were medicating, trying to give him some, you know, people were coming in and he was receiving visitors. But even in times like that, when you go visit somebody like that, you know who's really being oftentimes motivated? I remember when I would go and see my mom in her last days, and April pointed out, we go down there to make her feel better and she makes us feel better. But there are going to be times where we will need to receive. Don't be too proud to receive. When we need to be the ones receiving and being cared for, take it. Don't be too proud for that. But don't just stay there. Listen to this passage from 1 Thessalonians, verse 14. We exhort you, admonish the disorderly, encourage the faint-hearted, support the weak, be long-suffering towards all. I want to read those again. Admonish the disorderly. If you or I are being disorderly, what do we need? Are we fit for the front line right now? If we're being disorderly? No, what do we need? We need to be admonished. What's my job to do if I need to be admonished? I need to take it and do what? If I need to be admonished, I need to take it and do what? Change. Not need to be admonished next week and next month and next year. It's not, who am I? Oh, I'm the guy that everybody needs to admonish. No. I'm the guy that after having receiving admonishment needs to stand up. What did Jesus say to Peter? After you've turned, confirm your brethren. Admonish the disorderly. Encourage the faint-hearted. Do people get faint-hearted? What do faint-hearted people need? Encouragement. Support the weak. What do weak need? They need support. But in the military, if you're supporting the weak, he's injured, help him. You're supporting the weak and you want him to get better. If you are at a weak point in your life, if you have been battling something and it's been winning the battle, if you've been really struggling, let people help you. We've got elders here who have given their lives to help in situations like that. And others of us, Jonathan, I, all other brethren, all brothers and sisters all throughout this are available there to help you. Take that help, but take that help to do something with it and make yourself stronger. All of us, don't be afraid to be takers sometimes, but then move to becoming givers. Hebrews chapter 10, written to the Hebrews who needed some motivation. There was the author's writing, and he talks to one group of people and he refers to another group of people. There's one group of people that had given up and quit. They've completely forsaken the assembly. They don't come anymore. They've crucified the Son of God afresh. But these people over here, some of them need to step it up. Take heed. Take heed lest any of you fall. And he's going to tell them in chapter 10, you haven't yet endured unto blood. You know, you've gone through some things, but you haven't sacrificed blood yet. And you need some steadfastness. He starts in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19. Listen to the progressing forward tone in this. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by the way which he dedicated for us, a new and living way, through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, having a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in fullness of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and having our body washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our faith, of our hope, that it waver not. For he is faithful that promised. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. That's what we need to be doing. And so many of you are. I mean, the needs over the past months have been so many, and just constantly how often I see you meeting those needs, meeting those needs, meeting those needs. But is that everybody? Is everybody pushing in those ways? Is everybody being dedicated in those ways? Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking our own assemblies together, as the custom of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day drawing nigh. For if we sin willfully after that we've received the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more a sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment, a fierceness of fire which will devour the adversaries. A man that said at nothing, Moses' law, died without compassion on the word of two or three witnesses. Of how much sore punishment, think ye, shall he be judged worthy, who has trodden underfoot the Son of God, and has counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was unsanctified an unholy thing, and done despite to the Spirit of grace. We know him that said, vengeance belongs to me, I will recompense, and again the Lord will judge his people. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Call to remembrance the former days in which, after you were enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly being made a gazing stock both by reproaches and afflictions, and becoming partakers with them that were so used. You both had compassion on them that were in bonds, and you took joyfully the spoiling of your possessions, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and an abiding one. Cast not away, therefore, your boldness, for which you have great recompense of reward. You have need of patience or endurance. You have need of endurance, that having done the will of God, you may receive the promise. Some of you are pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and working and working and working. And for those of us that are doing that, for those of you that are doing that, keep doing that. And it says, don't be weary in well-doing. That doesn't mean don't give yourself a rest. You know, God told the Israelites, you know, work and then rest, and work and then rest, and then work and then rest. If you burn yourself out at both ends, you're not as capable of doing what you could do. But there is the danger sometimes of becoming weary in well-doing. Well, I tried, and that I tried that, and that didn't work. I guess I'm not going to try. Who wins if we decide to stop pulling? And if you're a person who other people are trying to pull and help, you know, help yourself up as well. It's like if a soldier stumbles and falls, You know, he falls off his horse. He's laying there. Ow. He's not injured so bad he needs to go to the medic tent. But you reach down and you're going to help him up. What do you need him to do? Do you want him to lay there? Oh, pull harder. Pull harder. Do what? You know, accept the help and get up. Keep going. Next one, real short one, is the little boy with dirty pants. One, the wife said, you know, so we came straight here from baseball. And it was like in Florida. I don't know if it was partway through the innings or if he got in the whole game or not. I know in Florida, where the preacher's wife is from, I remember down there, boy came in his little league uniform. You know, they just got to a certain point in the game, left the game, and were there for the meeting. But he just like maybe 8-year-old boy or something. He's pointing at the dirt on his knee. You know, I don't know if he was safe or not, but it was like, and you know what? An 8-year-old enjoys playing baseball. But then where'd they get to? They got right over there. There's an important principle of priority in Matthew 6:33. It says what? Seek ye first the kingdom of God. There's so many important and good and wonderful things in life. But of all the important and beautiful and wonderful things in life, which are we to seek first? Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And last one is James. And we know what a good guy James is. And I've really enjoyed having James in class. And I'm glad to hear today that he smiled, because when I think of James, he's always got a smile on his face. I mean, that's just part of who James is. And Jim told me something, shared something with me that I hope he doesn't mind me sharing with you all. I think it was Saturday we were talking. And he said something that's really remarkable. He says he never won. It's not that he's never had to discipline or correct James, of course. You know, James is a boy. Jim is a dad. He's had to do that. But he said he never remembers a single time of James behaving disrespectfully. 18 years old, and his father doesn't remember him ever being disrespectful. Doesn't mean he's been perfect. Doesn't mean he hasn't failed in other areas. But wow. Ephesians 6:2 says, children, honor your father and your mother. But you know what? It's not just James that has an obligation to be respectful, right? It's not the only ones told to be respectful. Wives are told to respect their husbands. We're told to respect the laws and civil authority. And we all need to be respectful and humble before God. How much could all of us benefit from having the respectful attitude that James has? Let's not waste his good example. We are all influenced by examples, and we all set examples. You may think, well, what I do doesn't make, it does. We all set examples, and we're all influenced by examples. When we stand and sing the invitation song, if 10 people sing out loud and heartily and thinking about the words and really sing that song, and you or I sit back and really don't bother to, and say, well, what does it mean? It makes a difference. If all of us think about the words in that song, and we stand and we sing that song, and as the prayer is led in a minute, if all of us, and said, well, I'm not the one leading prayer, what difference does it make? Who's God looking at? If all of us are following that prayer, if all of us are following and we want to have the amen in that prayer and let that prayer be from all of us, if all of us are pulling together, if all of us are praying together, if all of us are worshiping together, if all of us are taking advantage of Bible classes, I don't know what verse it says you have to come for the Bible class, but if you didn't bother to come for the Bible classes this morning, you missed a good opportunity to study the Bible with your brethren. What are we going to do this week? What are we going to do this evening? What are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do in our lives? When we're all pulling together, we can do great, great, great things.